You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in. You could be a big part, as always. Join us on the lines, talk or text 855-752-4842. I want to thank our buddy Aaron Zommers for producing us yesterday. Jess P.S. back in the seat on the board. Good to see you again, Jess.
Good to see you, Dom.
I'm glad you're back again. And today, it's Wednesday, my co-host for the day, Matt Rothschild, formerly of the Progressive Magazine. Former, a lot of formers here, man, former executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, current friend of ours and frequent Civic Media contributor and Big Bird fan. Hey, Matt, welcome back.
Oh, it's always great to be with you and Jess on a Wednesday afternoon, even a rainy, snowy Wednesday afternoon.
I know, man, it's spring in Wisconsin, well, almost anyway. That's how we do it around here. Lots to get to, as always, Matt, and I always appreciate you coming around and getting your perspective on these things. And I love it. You've been around a long time. You've been involved and been paying attention to politics for a very long time. And I keep hearing this recurring theme over and over and over and over and over again from Republicans over and over again, Matt. And let me just throw this one out there. Allison Durr reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. 2 weeks before Wisconsin's Supreme Court election, Schimmel raises Milwaukee vote counting trope. Of course he does. Of course. And just doing the hard work found this, right?
Yes, I did.
So Schimmel goes on right-wing talk radio, and this was a cat here in the state of Wisconsin, who called Tim Walz's young son a blubbering bitch boy. So I like to refer...
Right, just for being proud of his father.
Yes, yes. Which is something, you know, Jay Weber is probably not used to. I'm just saying. So I'm going to call Jay Weber the blubbering bitch boy, and I think I'm going to have to throw Brad Schimmel in here as well. They keep repeating it. They could have fixed it, but they keep wanting to sow doubt or confusion or both to the electorate, and there's only a couple of things that I think that would cause this. Either Brad Schimmel is truly an idiot. I mean, really that dumb that he cannot pick up, I don't know, the most recent paper quoting his own words and learn and understand how the voting works in Milwaukee County. Or he knows how it works and he's lying to everyone.
Jesse, I take door number two.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
Door number three, remove the or. It's hand.
Both of them. I know that both can be true. And given how this guy is, he might be that dumb. Let's hear the man in his own words.
Sure.
Get our votes banked. Make this too big to rig so we don't have to worry that at 11:30 in Milwaukee, they're going to find bags of ballots that they forgot to put into the machines like they did in 2018 or in 2024 when Eric Covey, you know, was ahead all night and then all of a sudden Milwaukee County changed that. Yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't know
you
if
lost.
There was fraud there. There's no way for me to know that.
There was no fraud.
There's no way for you to know that. Didn't they do a recount, at least during the Trump election, from some of the reported, Matt? And it is so frustrating to me that people can still consider this. And anyone that talks about this in these ways, to think that they are a serious candidate for anything. I wouldn't let this guy hold my pen. As the reporting states at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, just after midnight in 2018, more than 47,000 absentee ballots from Milwaukee voters were added to the statewide tally, giving Democrat Tony Evers his first solid lead in the race for governor against the incumbent at the time was Governor Scott Walker. Now, Evers ultimately won, though the time the city reported his absentee ballots prompted criticism from Republicans, including Walker, who said he was blindsided. Blindsided, I tell you, when he learned the city's absentee ballots were still being counted. Now, in the same race as Schimmel's lamenting, Schimmel lost his bid for a second term as Republican Attorney General. And if I recall some of the reporting on this, he was the only incumbent Attorney General to lose in that cycle. So, way to go, Brad. Now, also in November of 24, don't forget the mustache, right? Lost his bid to unseat Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin and claimed he was shocked. Shocked, I tell you. Now, these people are so shocked and surprised. He was shocked by Milwaukee's reporting of its absentee ballot results early in the morning after the election. More than 6 years after the scuffle over the 2018 absentee ballots, it is widespread knowledge. Is it really, though, Allison? Is it widespread knowledge? Widespread knowledge that the state's most populous city consistently reports its absentee ballots all at once early in the morning after a major election. Now, why would that be, Matt? Is that because of the fraud? You know, all those black people in Milwaukee. Isn't that what you're really saying, Brad Schimmel, Republicans? That's because the sheer number of absentee ballots cast by the city's voters in major elections, coupled with a state law prohibiting clerks from processing absentee ballots before 7 a.m. on election day.
And they could have fixed that. In fact, there was a bill to fix that, to allow the clerks to count the absentee ballots before 7 a.m. the day of the election. But Republicans wouldn't pass it. So now, as has happened not just in Milwaukee, but dozens of other towns and cities, they do a central count of all absentee ballots after they close the doors on the people who've been standing in line till 8 p.m. So you can't count hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of ballots, you know, between 8 o'clock and 8:10, and get the result. It takes a while to count those. That's why in Milwaukee you get the results at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, or 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. It's just standard. It's been audited. It's been recounted dozens of times, and there's nothing wrong there in Milwaukee or in other cities and towns that do central count. And I got to believe Schimmel knows this. I mean, there's no way he can't know it. It's
just,
he can't come out in public and say, these Hovde lost fair and square, or he himself lost fair and square, or dare I say it, Donald Trump lost fair and square sometimes.
They don't want
to admit that.
Easy now, Matt.
That man needs a support network.
Yes, he does. Widespread knowledge, Matt. Apparently only widespread knowledge if you're not a losing Republican in that particular race. Because I don't remember Donald Trump lamenting the late counting of the absentee ballots in the last election, right? Widespread knowledge. Maybe someone should tell Hovde, Scott Walker, and wannabe Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Brad Schimmel. To your point, the Republican-controlled Senate last year let a bipartisan bill die. Now, for Brad Schimmel, that means both Republicans and Democrats in the Assembly would have made it possible for clerks to start processing and finish counting the absentee ballots earlier. They let it die. They let it die. And why? Well, because that gives them reason, excuse, ability to cast some shade on the city of Milwaukee. They let it die. They could have done something about it. Oh, but there's a little bit more from the reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Let's see here. They talked about the board. Let's get down. Schimmel, a conservative Waukesha County judge. We know he's running against Susan Crawford. Vote for Susan. I think she knows how the votes are counted in the city of Milwaukee. In a statement, Crawford's spokesman said this: Schimmel is dabbling in conspiracy theories to please his ally Elon Musk, and it's unbecoming of a judge and candidate for the state's high court. Of course, referencing Musk and the millions of dollars he put into both the presidential race, and of course, he's supporting Schimmel as well.
Unbecoming, putting it mildly.
Yeah, come on. They could have fixed it. They keep bringing it up, and I don't know. I know, so it, maybe it's better. Is it better? I'm not sure. Is it better that Brad Schimmel is actually aware of this and is lying to everybody, putting this out there to cast doubt on this election? Is that possible? Or is he just a moron? Does he really not? Is he just actually ignorant of how it happens? I don't know which one is worth, but both of them are disqualifying for him to be certainly on the Wisconsin Supreme Court judge in Waukesha. You might want to reconsider, who you have on your bench.
I mean, he's just regurgitating this myth, this falsehood, this lie, this blatant lie, to please not just Elon Musk, as it said in that article, but Donald Trump himself and all the right-wingers in Wisconsin who've been fed this propaganda, you know, for years now. They just need, you know, to hear, to get their steady diet of this crap. I mean, it's unbelievable. And Brad Schimmel, I mean, the guy's been a hack since day one. In 2010, when he was district attorney in Walworth County, he gave Scott Jensen, who was the former Republican majority leader in the state assembly, just a slap on the wrist and a and settled for a misdemeanor when he was had been indicted on three felonies.
For the caucus scandals.
Caucus scandal in 2001, when he and his Democratic counterpart, Chuck Quala, they and their staffs were engaging in campaigning in the People's House on our dime, and they got caught red-handed. Both were convicted. Jensen got to appeal his conviction and get a retrial in Waukesha County. And who was the DA there? Brad Schimmel. And Brad Schimmel just, you know, gave no time. Quala, you know, was sentenced to 9 months in jail.
You know, I mean, different outcomes for the same criming. That's a Democrat and a Republican. And I would also know, my understanding, Jensen is a, you know, big paid lobbyist. And you can't be a big paid lobbyist if you're a big fat felon. So that was very critical for Jensen to, you know, do this lobbying gig that he has, I think, for, God, maybe it's a school choice. I mean, he's involved. You can Google it, folks. You know where it's at. All the lobbyists are listed somewhere. You can find out who's paying them and what they're advocating for. But that action with, you know, through the moving of, I think, the venue of that, and they put it in Waukesha, and it was Brad Schimmel, and they were able to do that, and he got a misdemeanor. Now he's able to, you know, go on and make that big lobby money. So there you go, folks. This is the guy who wants to be your next Wisconsin Supreme Court justice. This is a guy who is palling around with Trump Jr. and the bad Kirk. Man, not even the good Kirk. You know, Captain Kirk. The bad Kirk. Charlie Kirk. I mean, and he's also said multiple times, he is here. We've heard the video. We've heard the audio. I'm here to be a support team for Donald Trump. He needs people like Brad Schimmel on the court. And this is the guy who bragged, or complained, I guess, depends on how you look at it, about going through knee pads for begging all that money.
He made good use of them. Elon Musk has poured in $12 million at last count, probably more by now.
I don't know if he was begging, Matt. Come back with us, Matt Rothschild, joining me today. Just PS is back on the board. We got some sound. Tim Walz was in Eau Claire as well. And folks, Tammy Baldwin, our senator from the great state of Wisconsin, she is going around. You know, similar, I guess, to what Bernie Sanders is doing. Some of our representatives, Mark Polkan included, are out there. You know, they're pounding the pavement. They're talking to the folks. We're going to get to some of that as well. Also, Julie Bomar, she's the executive director of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We went had quite a conversation yesterday about what the federal government is doing to Wisconsin farmers. We're going to get her take as well. Come back with us, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvage Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-7. Got Matt Rothschild joining me today. Got Just PS on the board. I believe we're having a few phone problems, so folks, be patient. We'll get some engineers, some smarter folks than I working on that, 855-752-4842. Hopefully that will not stop us from interviewing our guest coming up at the bottom of the hour, Julie Bomar, Executive Director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union, on the impact of these administrative changes going on, the tariffs, and what's happening to Wisconsin farmers. We look forward to that conversation. Matt, as mentioned, Tim Walz in Eau Claire, man, we got some sound of that. Want to bring it to you fine folks and just always doing the hard work. Let's start with cut number one about, come on, do something, people. Let's hear what Tim had to say.
I understand what I have is I have a platform and a megaphone, and my goal in doing these town halls is I was hearing that primal scream of God dang it, do something.
Motley Crue primal scream, baby, that's what I'm talking. God dang it, do something. Do something. And I don't
know. At least he was listening, you know. At least he did hear it. Well, I've been wondering, you know, where's Kamala Harris been? I mean, she's got to be hearing this primal scream too. Anyone who knows any Democrat or progressive who's looking at what Donald Trump's doing to our country has got to be hearing this primal scream.
And perhaps we'll get to that in the next hour. The Democratic base is angry. You know, all the Democrats, save one in the House, voted against this continuing resolutions, and the Democrats in the Senate just rolled over and took it. I'm still mad about that. We will get to that, but let's stay on point right now. Tim Walz in Eau Claire. Let's hear cut number two, please.
I know some of you know this on the iPhone. They've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to it to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping. So, and if you own one, we're not blaming you. You can take dental floss and pull the Tesla thing off, you know, and take out, just telling you.
I love that sense of humor, man. That's what you need, man. Poke fun at these guys. Don't let them just torment us to death.
Well, and they don't have a sense of humor whatsoever, so that makes it even more entertaining when it really...
Well, yeah, I mean, when the only humor that you're allowed to have is something that, you know, makes fun of other human beings for innate characteristics.
Oh, yes. Yeah, digging deep. Also, Matt, you mentioned Tammy Baldwin in the midst of a, what, statewide tour going out talking to folks. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, you know, I just love what Tammy Baldwin's doing now and what Mark Pocan's been doing, too, going up to Van Orden's district. Tammy was in La Crosse on Monday. This is a hands-off Medicaid tour. She was in La Crosse on Monday. She was in Eau Claire also yesterday. Tomorrow she's going to be in Madison and Racine and then Waukesha on Friday. I mean, she's getting out there, you know, going across the state, meeting with constituents where Republicans are hiding from constituents right now. And she's bringing up this issue. Look, 1.3 million Wisconsinites get some Medicaid help, and Trump and the Republicans in the Congress are going to cut Medicaid, and people are going to get hurt. And she's drawn attention to that, and she's fighting back against that, and that's just what we need.
Wow, 1.3 million Wisconsin citizens on some sort of Medicaid or disability or something, and some, you know, they're deriving a benefit from that program. And Tammy Baldwin isn't out there asking folks, are you a Dem or Republican? Because you know what? Doesn't matter. If you're on this program and it gets cut, it won't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican or a non-voter. You will be impacted by the decisions that this administration is making. And let's remind everyone why we are going through this process. Because Donald Trump wants to give $4.5 trillion in tax cuts to the wealthy. That's why we're doing this. That's why we're banging our head against the wall. That's why Tammy Baldwin's out talking about the impact of the reduction of services and Medicaid to 1.3 million citizens. That's why our next...
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I want to interrupt here just because, you know, Tammy made this point herself. She said, we need to show the president and congressional Republicans what cuts to Medicaid would mean to Wisconsinites. Show them that their tax cut for their wealthy friends will be life or death to some Wisconsinites, and show them that we're fighting back. That's our Senator Tammy Baldwin. She's on a hands-off Medicaid tour. She's speaking up here at a time where we need all our elected representatives to speak up, at least those with a conscience. I'm not talking to you, Van Orden.
Well, I mean, and for the policy of at least the directive from House Speaker Mike Johnson is don't have town halls. I mean, really, hey, you know, we got a great, we got all this COVID going around, and what are we going to do? You know, everyone's testing positive. Well, just don't test anymore. It'll be fine. Yeah. Hey, all these people are mad at our town halls. Everyone's mad at us. What should we do? Should we change our policies? Should we change our minds? Should we reevaluate our positions? No, just don't have town halls anymore. I mean,
Whisk it under the rug. Bury your head in the sand.
Way to represent the constituents. Oh, and then when they actually do a town hall, and heaven forbid someone get mad at them about the, you know, the various cuts and things that they're saying they're going to do against veterans and farmers and the poor and the elderly. I mean, I got the only people that I don't know who's going to get a negative impact from the policies of this administration are the very ones that we're going through these quote unquote exercises for. The 1%, the billionaires and the millionaires, man. They're going to be fine, but that's why we're doing... Those folks aren't showing up at the town halls, right? Those folks are scratching the checks and meeting in the smoke-filled back rooms, right? These folks that are showing up, they're not all, you know, hard, lunatic, lefty, whatever you want to call it. These are
outside
folks.
Agitators, that's what he calls
yeah,
them.
Yeah, outside, as they came from outside, inside, because you're in their town. You represent their district. Yeah, they're coming in, they're telling you what they think. And even if they voted for someone else, or even if they didn't vote, hell, even if they voted for you, maybe they should listen. Maybe you should listen, Republicans, when these folks are showing up and telling you how concerned they are. Maybe you should take that under advisement. Maybe you should be more worried about whether or not your constituents were able to, I don't know, feed themselves versus whether or not we need to go through these exercises. So with your vote and the support of your president, you can give tax breaks for billionaires. Folks, come back with us. Julie Bolmar, Executive Director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Wisconsin farmers, Wisconsin citizens, Wisconsin's food challenge, they're going to be impacted by this administration. We'll get into it next. 855-752-4842. Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a talk line. It's a text line. Usually it works. We're working on it right now, but be patient. We appreciate everyone. Matt Rothschild joining me today. Jess P.S. is on the board, and I'm jazzed as hell to introduce to you our next guest. Her name, Julie Bolmar. She's the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Julie, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. The administration, the federal administration, the Trump administration, making all sorts of changes. And we reported on this quite a bit yesterday. So this is a timely interview. We appreciate you joining us. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is saying that the Trump administration canceled a program that paid Wisconsin farmers to grow food for food pantries. And one of the statistics that stood out to me that I was unaware of and still kind of shocking to me is that more than 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. Julie, what's your impression on how this is going to impact not only those 617,000 Wisconsin residents, but the farmers that provide that food to those pantries?
It's going to have devastating effects. The local food purchase assistance program has been in effect for several years now. And, you know, COVID really woke us all up, right, to the problems in the supply chain and how we don't really have access to fresh food. If anything happens, it's a fragile food system. And so there were some monies that were made available at that time. And really what happened is it just helped develop a structure that could provide food insecure people with fresh, nutritious, protein-ridden food that was locally grown by farmers, by their neighbors, and it benefited groups of farmers that don't often benefit from the Farm Bill. And it developed a great infrastructure across the entire state so that smaller farmers could actually participate in the food system in a way that they hadn't before. It's had a hell of an impact. And we're really, really upset that contracts and promises are broken.
Apparently, the USDA Deputy Administrator, Jack Tuckwiller, wrote when they sent a letter canceling this program, that this program, quote, no longer effectuates agency priorities. I'm wondering.
That's bureaucratic talk for you.
What is the USDA priority then, Julie, if not to assist farmers in at least this kind of way? Because farmers get all sorts of other assistance, right? This isn't the only assistance that we as taxpayers provide to our farmers for our agriculture and our food supply chain and all that. Why is it that this one is being targeted, in your opinion?
Well, I think that it was focused on farmers that don't often meet the stereotypical definition of farmer in the United States. And so big commodity growers may often benefit from subsidy programs, from insurance and benefits like that by way of growing commodities. A lot of the smaller growers, which actually are all across Wisconsin, we have a very diversified agricultural landscape. Many of those farmers do not get to benefit in the same ways. They may be a specialty crop grower, and then you don't get subsidies, from the United States government. You may be growing hay, and you don't get subsidies from the United States government, whereas the big guys, the big boys of it all do. They're at least more eligible for it. So this one really targeted those folks that are often left out in the Farm Bill by helping them get into these food systems, these highways, if you will, that literally can distribute food in smaller, more local quantities and qualities.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Julie Bomar, the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. According to the reporting, Julie, the program, 289 Wisconsin farms participated in the program, providing $4.2 million worth of food to more than 250 pantries and schools. So this impacts everybody, regardless of ideological or political leaning. Julie, I'm assuming you have all sorts of political stripes in your organization. How are folks reacting to this?
Well, it's really been interesting to watch all of the federal actions and how they're impacting folks. We have a big tent organization, lots of different kinds of growers, and we did a survey just a few weeks ago to see how the federal decisions were affecting people, and all different kinds of stories came out. And so it kind of depends on what sector you're in and how you've been directly impacted, but the stories are varied, and almost universally there's been negative impact on our members. There are a few who wrote in that they're hopeful that maybe tariffs and things like that will help them in some way, because they may be a smaller producer and they're hoping that the local folks will have to buy more food from them because the costs are gonna go up on imported foods. So, there has been some differences in opinion, but the vast majority of folks that have written in and have showed up at our town halls are saying this negatively impacts them.
Julie, do you have folks, farmers with different political leanings. Do you know any that have expressed little buyer's remorse to you? They voted for Trump and now, holy smokes, he's taking our programs away. He's taking our subsidies away.
I haven't had anybody just come up and say they had buyer's remorse. I mean, certainly farmers are not a monolith. We all know that, right? There are differences of opinion. They may say, I kind of am waiting to see what happens in this area. I don't like what's happening over here. I think it's an overreach. So I think it's not necessarily an easy yes or no or buyer's remorse or not. But a lot of folks, of course, didn't vote for Trump either. So they didn't go into this with those kinds of expectations.
I drive down 94 between Madison and Milwaukee, and I'm always surprised at these huge Trump signs in the farmers' fields. And I'm just scratching my head, what is it that Trump has given these folks that make them so zealous in favor of him? Do you have any clue on that?
Well, I think we've had four decades, multiple administrations to demonstrate that the Farm Bill doesn't work for all farmers. And so whether you're Democrat or Republican, you probably have a beef with the way that the federal government is managing helping shape the food system. And so, there's a lot of folks that really believe that big ag and big pharma need to go, and they maybe saw a disruptor that could change and help shake those things loose. I think that certainly is an opinion by some. Others may have a lot of trouble with the regulatory control that we see at the state and the federal level as well. So there's a large factor of reasons that people may choose this. I think one thing that I can say that working in the farm community for a long time, that farmers believe contracts should be honored. And so that one's really, they're not being honored.
Not being honored. And one of those contracts is to schools. I mean, fresh food for school lunches. Those are being cut. And, you know, I thought this was a great program so the kids can have something, you know, fresher than tater tots that are deep fried, you know, when the local farmers bring in food to the school. And how many schools are going to be impacted by this cut on this program?
Oh, there's 30 just up in my region in the small few county area. It's going to be massive if you look across the state. And we have close to 300 food pantries that are going to be impacted by the termination of the local food purchase assistance program, close to 300 farmers. It is going to have a big impact. I also happen to sit on a board of directors for a local food bank, and they're very concerned about how they're going to be procuring fresh meat, fresh eggs, and, you know, all those high quality things that they were getting from the program, and especially because they were counting on it. Remember, a lot of the farmers are already planting right now in their greenhouses. They agreed to uphold their end of the bargain, and they're put out the work, they put out the money, and now that's going to be cut. That's what's so irritating, I think, to many, is that it's just a matter of integrity.
So that violation of that contract, of that word that the government gave them, is so galling to them right now, on top of the fact that they're going to have an economic negative impact too.
Absolutely.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Julie Bomar, executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Matt Rothschild joining us today as well. Some of the reporting continuing on this, this Stepping Stones of Dunn County, they use this program to provide 50,000 pounds of food to its clients. And apparently this pantry feeds more than 11% of Dunn County. Now, I know some of these counties don't have a lot of people, but 11% is a lot of people. That's a big percentage of the population. I don't care how many people are in that county, Julie. And this is all to save, if I'm understanding the math here, is this like a $4-some million program? Is that's what's being cut here?
Yeah, exactly. And it was really run efficiently. How much more efficient can you get than shipping locally, right? And the money stays in the economy. It's not going out to Walmart and then to Arkansas. I mean, this is like literally an economic booster for rural economies as well. So it was run effectively. And I lived in Dunn County for 30 some years. I remember talking to physicians. I did a lot of research on rural poverty in a previous career. There are people who are malnourished, not just like they cannot leave their community to go in to these food pantries. So these pop-up pantries and things that they have in rural Wisconsin are critical for people who cannot afford to even drive into town. And so it is incredibly serious. And I think, you know, most people, regardless of their political affiliation, agree that we should try to keep things efficient and local and do the best that we can for those folks that are literally, you know, malnourished.
Well, and I think it was just brought up, and I want to reiterate it again. This is fresh farm food. You know, these aren't bags of chips. These aren't, you know, processed by big food manufacturing. This is money that's being circulated through the local economy more than once. Right. We hear people about that are hiring some part time help to help, you know, to help them in these endeavors. Well, that also, you know, it creates employment. It creates food security. It creates a secure food supply lines. As you mentioned before, COVID really exposed a lot of these concerns. So as an investment on the dollar, it's hard to think of another program that would be have the impact that this program, and it's I hate to say $4 million is not a big program, but it's really not, especially when you consider some of the monies that, I don't know, the president of the United States spends when he goes in Air Force One to go golfing, I believe, at about $3.5 million per when he's got to pull out the plane. You know, these efforts are being done, Julie, to effectuate a justification for trillions of dollars in tax cuts. And people can have an opinion whether or not they think that's righteous or just. Are your members and the people in your communities, do they recognize that this is the impetus for all of this? That's why we're doing this, is to justify and pay for tax cuts.
I think that there more work needs to be done on connecting the dots there for sure, Dom. I think that a lot of folks were excited, you know, maybe about more efficient government or wasteful programs being targeted, and they maybe didn't sign up for the kinds of cuts that we're seeing, and they weren't sure where they were going to be targeted. But rural America is going to be hit particularly lopsidedly in all of this, and you know, we're, people I think are starting to put it together.
Do you have a moment to come around on the next segment as well? I want to ask about tariffs and what you saw as the impact currently and perhaps what was done in the past. But while we have just this one segment, appreciate your time. The local politicians in these areas, has there been any discussions? Have they shown up at any of the meetings? Have they, you know, provided any insight, right, left, regardless of their political leanings? Are they involved in the community? And what are their thoughts? Have you heard anything?
We've heard a lot from local elected officials. We did have a town hall that we sponsored a few weeks ago. We offered it open to representatives. We're a nonpartisan organization. We invite everybody. And the only folks to show up were on the Democratic side of the aisle. Although I have seen signs that GOP representatives are visiting food pantries and food banks. So that's good to see. We were disappointed that they didn't show up.
Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Come back with us. Julie Bomar, Executive Director from Wisconsin Farmers Union. Matt Rothschild as well. Jess P.S. working on the board. I want to get into some of the tariff conversations and what you're hearing on the current situation. Plus, I want to get your feedback on how it went the last time Donald Trump started a trade war and how he paid the farmers. Come back with us. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You got Matt Rothschild joining me today as a co-host. Jess P.S. is on the board. And Julie Bomar, the executive director from Wisconsin Farmers Union, joining us for one more segment. Julie, thank you for sticking around. Certainly appreciate it. Last time around, when Trump administration first came around, we got into a trade war. And he ended up scratching checks directly to farmers to the tune, I believe, of $16 billion in one time. Another time was like eight. It was almost like $30 billion that was handed out from a New Deal era program under Donald Trump directly to the farmers because of the retaliation that we were getting in the trade wars to, you know, keep them afloat, keep them going. We got to keep have a food supply, right? So for $30 billion, and this wasn't a loan. I mean, this wasn't, you know, an auto bailout. This was just cash out, and I believe it was during an election. So I have all sorts of issues with that. But I want to get your sense. When we were living through that, how were the farmers reacting to the first round of tariff wars, let's call it?
Well, as an ag organization that serves mainly small and medium-sized farmers, I can tell you that our members felt like the bailout was disproportionately beneficial to the largest growers, and so, and especially commodity growers, soybeans, corn, that kind of thing. Whereas if you look across the entire sector, we're exporting specialty cheeses, cranberries, and ginseng. I mean, it is a diversified agriculture system that we operate in. So when only a certain segment of the biggest producers are benefiting from it, you're going to hear foul from the smaller growers for sure. And we lose markets, right? We just lose markets. If you're a commodity grower as well, you should be concerned about China and Brazil stepping up and taking over those market shares.
That was going to be my next thing. I think ginseng was one of the things that was really hurt. And you know, they went and found other buyers in other countries. And, you know, have we rebounded to your understanding from the, you know, the repercussions of that first trade war when those markets were lost? Have we gotten them back? We got a fraction back. What's your experience been?
I think it's all over the board, actually, Dom. I mean, you see some that have bounced back. Farming is up and down all the time anyway. And so we use subsidies to try to stabilize things more on the demand side of things. You know, when the demand goes down or markets crash, then we just try to fill it in with cash rather than having a more stabilized system where maybe we are monitoring supplies better, like some other countries do. Where we really can try to have a little bit more control on the breaks, if you will, for the hot and the cold of agriculture markets. But nevertheless, it will hurt things. And especially now with our big kerfuffle with Europe, I think those folks are not going to come back very easy. We're doing some permanent damage in our global relationships. And I think they're not going to come back to the table very quickly.
It must be almost impossible for farmers to figure out what to do here. You mentioned it's planting season right now or coming up. You know, our biggest export partners here are, guess what? Canada, Mexico, China, and Europe's got to be right behind that. And so, you know, how much do you grow? You know, are you going to be able to sell all you got? Are your markets going to dry up because of these tariffs? There just must be all these questions swirling around. How do farmers wrestle with that?
I've heard some expressed large concerns about the input costs going up in particular. So we get 85% of our potash from Canada. That's essential for our type of soils and growing, you know, having healthy enough soil to grow, especially commodity crops. And so when 85% of the potash market is dependent on a relationship with Canada, yeah, you can bet that people are concerned and they may see, you know, hundreds of percentage increases going up on that. And we can't store enough potash to build ahead for that. We can only hold it in the supply sheds that we have. And so people are very concerned, and that won't hit until later in the growing season. So you bet farmers are concerned. We've heard a lot about that.
Yeah, I just don't know how you plan for all this.
Yeah, how do you plan?
It is very difficult, and you know, being a farmer means you have to have a lot of knowledge about a lot of things, and then above and beyond that, the things you cannot control, they got to fall in line as well in order to, you know, make it profitable. And it's more than just profit, as mentioned. This is, you know, this is feeding the United States. This is feeding the world. This is what we do. You brought up regulation a little bit, and you said we fill the hole with cash. What's the appetite for greater government regulation to kind of level off some of the you know, peaks and valleys that we experience in the industry?
Well, there's some debate going on for sure in farm country about that. I can tell you, I've never met a farmer ever that wants to get they would rather have their profit come from the market, not from the government. That is a universal theme. They want the market to work for them. And so I think that there's different ideas on how to do that, whether you work more on the demand or on the supply side. But I can tell you a lot of folks are paying directly out of their farm gate profits to pay for exporting and developing relationships overseas. That's called the checkoff system. They actually are required by law to pay for things and for exporting and developing those relationships. And those relationships are being destroyed. So you can bet that your dairy producers and your pork producers are mad about that.
Well, Julie, I don't know if you know this, but I used to work at my neighbor's dairy farm. I tell everybody, hardest work I ever had. Doing work with you. Julie Bohm, our executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Thank you so much for coming around and edifying our audience. Please do so again. We appreciate it.
Thanks for uplifting those voices. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Matt Rothschild, Jess P.S. Come back on the other side. Going to hit some of the national news. John Roberts, what's he's doing? The Fed, they had a meeting today. We'll see what happens there. Plus, updates on the crap show that is going on right now. Stick around, 855-752-4842. Maybe the folds will be fixed by then.
The The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.